It's the morning show on the Ideas Network. I'm Jay Carlisle Larson in for Kate Archer Kent. Thanks for joining us this morning. Now, we focus on economic issues facing young LGBTQ plus people in the Milwaukee area, especially during the pandemic. According to research from the Williams Institute, the LGBTQ plus community faces higher rates of poverty compared to the broader population. Our next guest heads an organization that quickly pivoted to providing aid online to young LGBTQ plus people when in-person help became all but impossible. Now, are you gay, lesbian, trans, or a member of the LGBTQ plus community? What was your experience like over the last year and a half? Have you seen youth in that community affected by the pandemic? We want to hear from you. Call 800-642-1234 or email ideas at WPR.org. Sydney Borden is the youth therapist for the LGBT Community Center in Milwaukee. The organization works with more than 100 individuals who are between 13 and 24 years old. Sydney, thanks so much for joining us today.
It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you for having me.
So we're putting this through the lens of the pandemic. How has your community center been doing over the last year and a half?
It's definitely been a struggle, but I found that we pivoted quite quickly to be able to accommodate the needs of as many people as possible. And like many other people, you know, back March, April, May, trying to make a shift to online, it came with unique challenges. For us, it wasn't so much of trying to convince people to utilize an online platform more than it was trying to make sure that we were able to help people gain access to those sorts of technology so that they could actually like keep in contact with us. And while that came with its own kind of unique struggles in and of itself, I found that we were able to meet the needs of as many people as possible, as quickly as possible, without too much of an issue.
And have you been able to start folding in any in-person, assistance over the last year, or has it been mainly virtual?
So I would say majority virtual. We did have a period between June and November where we started seeing people in person again. And as things have sort of started lifting, we have the intention of beginning to offer in-person services. And we're in a little bit of a unique situation where we are physically moving locations. And with construction being a little bit delayed, we haven't been able to get into our new building yet. So the in-person services are to come. But for right now, we are strictly 100% virtual for all the services we're offering.
And can you just give us a little bit of an overview about where you're moving from and where you're moving to once you finally ramp up to in-person services?
So we used to be in one of the beautiful cream Blatz buildings kind of sort of next to MSOE's campus, and we only moved about 3/4 of a mile away. Now we're about 2 blocks north of Pfizer Forum off of 3rd and Court Street, just across the street from Golden Meyer School. Hopefully, as soon as we get this open, we're actually moving to an entire freestanding building versus we used to be on the second floor of a 3-story office building. So it'll be a lot easier to reach us. We now have a parking lot, which is going to make a lot of our frequent flyers very, very happy because now they have somewhere to park when they come to see us. And hopefully it'll be able to accommodate a lot more people so that we can continue expanding our services and be able to offer, even more.
And let's talk about some of the programs and services the LGBT Community Center offers. What specific programs are available for young members of the LGBTQ plus community?
So the majority of our youth services, since we are grant funded, our youth is sort of defined as being 11 to 24, which is, you're hard pressed to find a 20-year-old that thinks that they're a youth, but that's still how we classify it. But right now we offer our virtual drop-in, which is sort of a safe space for young folks. Right now it kind of functions more like a virtual hangout. A lot of times it'll be headed by one of our undergraduate interns and our youth program coordinator. And it's just a space for kids to be able to like, come on, they hang out, share maybe what's been going on in their lives. Sometimes they'll get together and play a game. They'll do kind of others like semi-structured activities. And it's kind of just a space for the youth to be able to make it their own. We also offer 2 support groups. One is just a very general LGBTQ and mental health support group. And another one is a trans, gender non-conforming and non-binary support group. The first happens Wednesdays from 4 to 5:30. The second Thursdays 4 to 5:30. And both of them are exclusively virtual right now, but we like to make sure that our groups function as a drop-in sort of format, meaning that there's no like very structured or regimented intake that somebody has to go through or some kind of very long registration process. It's just there for people to be able to come and go as they please, to be able to utilize that service in the most sort of like open and accessible way.
Did you end up having to, or did your community center end up having to cut any programs at all, you know, as the pandemic got underway? You know, what weren't you able to do outside of maybe in-person programs?
So we actually were in a very a wonderful position where we didn't have to cut anything. We actually, if you can believe it, added more services. So I guess instead of thinking like what program was cut, it was maybe just that there were certain programs we offered more than one time a week that we did have to start offering only once a week, like the drop-in center that I had mentioned earlier. When we're in person, that is a four-hour program that happens 3 days a week. Now that we're sort of in a virtual format, it's only happening on Mondays, and it's about a 2.5-hour program. We have an older adult program that was much the same. They're not that it had to get cut, just that it had to go from being 2 days a week to being one for about an hour less. So I think that we were pretty lucky in that right to be able to continue offering all of our services and then add additional groups to be able to continue reaching all of the folks that had been coming to see us in person at the center.
We are talking with Sydney Borden right now. She is the youth therapist for the LGBT Community Center in Milwaukee. And you can call in at 800-642-1234 with your own experiences or if you have any questions. Now, Sydney, you know, one of the things you mentioned a little bit earlier was, you know, access to, you know, these virtual programs. You're operating virtually. What other support outside of, you know, the programs that you offer, have you been offering to people who might have limited access to, say, broadband or internet service?
So that has been a unique challenge. We have come into contact with some instances with youth that might not have access to a laptop, might not have access to internet. And what ended up being very fortunate for us is being sort of locked within an area of the Milwaukee public school systems is that was a sort of, that was the service that they were able to provide to kids that might not have been able to get onto the internet. They were offering hotspots, or kids that didn't have laptops, they were able to come up with Chromebooks. And because we were able to sort of find access in that way to kind of help us meet that need, we found that just by sure virtue of luck, that a lot of the kids that we were noticing those issues with were students in the public school system who were able to gain access through that way. Operating as a nonprofit, being able to provide internet specifically was a unique challenge. We did the best that we could. We tried to accommodate meeting people, you know, sort of socially distanced in public if it was possible, whether that was in a park or some other kind of like big open space, you know, wearing masks, following all of our guidelines. But aside from that, I think that a lot of things just luckily lined up in place pretty perfectly for us, and that was able to help us continue to facilitate those sorts of services.
Now, Sydney, we've been talking about, you know, how your community center, you know, rose to the challenge of the pandemic, and, you know, getting these services to young people. But what kind of, you know, issues were, you know, I don't want to call them kids, but these young people, what did they bring to you during the pandemic? Did you notice any difference between, you know, what they were coming with, maybe advice wise or issues wise, before the pandemic and then during the pandemic?
I wouldn't say so much that the issue itself changed. Maybe just it kind of had a different face. You know, we work a lot with kids who are experiencing different kinds of mood and anxiety disorders. And when we would think about anxiety, you know, kind of pre-COVID, it was more situational. It was more, you know, worried about what came before, what's going to come after. But in the pandemic, it is sort of more of this existential worry. It's, you know, what's going to happen to everyone? When do we get to see people in person again? When is life going to return, you know, back to normal as we knew it? And it became really challenging to have that conversation a lot, because I would find that all of us have those same questions, whether we're young people or not. We all were sort of in this period where we're noticing we're in a very unprecedented time. We weren't really sure what was going to happen next. We didn't have a lot of those big ticket answers, so it was really just trying to tend to and to validate the anxiety in the moment, own that, while the kids and the young people were feeling that, it was something that we as staff at the center were feeling too, and I think that through being very honest and transparent about the situation that we were in and kind of fostering that sort of conversation in that way, I thought that we were able to have a lot more meaningful conversations where instead of trying to make somebody feel as though we're lessening their experience, we were more there to share that experience and sort of foster that growth together to sort of demonstrate that we're going through this same thing at the same time and we're going to be able to do it together.
Our guest right now is youth therapist Sydney Borden. She works one-on-one with LGBTQ plus youth through a local community center in the Milwaukee area. And you can call in with your experiences or questions at 800-642-1234. I'm Jay Carlisle Larson. It's the morning show on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show on the Ideas Network. I'm Jay Carlisle Larson. Right now, we continue our conversation about how the COVID-19 pandemic impacted the social and economic well-being of the LGBTQ plus community, especially young people. And we want to hear from you. Are you a teenager that identifies within the LGBTQ plus community? What challenges have you faced over the last year? Maybe what wins have you had? Do you work with LGBTQ youth? What do they need right now to make it through the pandemic and thrive in the future? Call in now, 800-642-1234, or you can email ideas@wpr.org. We're talking with Sydney Borden of the LGBTQ community. The LGBT Community Center in Milwaukee. And Sydney, before the break, we were talking about, the anxieties that some of these kids were bringing to you during, the pandemic. And one thing that stood out to me, is kind of the act of coming out, and that some kids, some young people might not be out yet. Is that something that you and your organization, had to kind of maneuver around to help people, during the pandemic when they might not have as much privacy as they would coming into the community center?
Absolutely. That was, I would say, probably the biggest challenge that we faced earliest on is recognizing that, we're living in Milwaukee. It's a pretty old city. Some of these houses don't quite have the thickest walls. And we were noticing that there were a lot of young people that were sort of disengaging from our services because they didn't feel as though they had a confidential space to be able to facilitate those conversations. And for some of them that may have had the space, they didn't really feel that they had the degree of comfort to even be saying those words aloud when they were in their home for fear of who was going to be listening, who might overhear them, and sort of inadvertently outing themselves in a space that they might not feel safe or comfortable or maybe even just ready. Each situation was uniquely different. And I would say for sure that that was something that was missed immediately, was being able to have that 100% confidential space in the center and knowing that that was something that was a very big privilege of having been in person for so long.
I want to switch gears just a tiny bit, because, your community center serves Milwaukee. How are young people of color and members of the LGBT community, being disproportionately, affected by the pandemic right now? Did you see any shifts at all?
I definitely wouldn't say that we saw many shifts as far as the demographics of the folks that we were serving. I would definitely say that the majority of the young people that I do see are folks who are people of color, and I didn't see any drastic shift as far as, discontinuing seeing those young people. I found that there was a really big shift that needed to happen, and it was something that we were able to tend to, but it was very wonderful to be able to continue servicing those folks and knowing that there is such a dearth of services that are focusing specifically on meeting the needs of that community. And I know that we did the very best that we could to be able to rise to that challenge to make sure that that wasn't a demographic that fell by the wayside.
Now, one of the things that we did want to talk to you about, and we've kind of gotten to it here and there throughout the conversation, has been the economic impact that the COVID-19 pandemic had on the LGBT plus community. You know, there was a study done by the Williams Institute, that's at UCLA, that, you know, estimated about 1 in 4 LGBTQ plus people across the United States face things like food insecurity. How many of your members are dealing with food insecurity currently?
I would definitely say that we have a decent number of folks that are experiencing issues in and around that. But what we were able to do to be able to sort of rise and meet that need was we actually operate as a food pantry. And when the pandemic happened, instead of allowing folks to be able to come into the center to be able to, you know, self-select the items that they would like, we began pre-packaging bags to kind of meet the needs of folks. And we noticed more that it was folks with specific dietary needs that were sort of at the biggest disadvantage, whether that was folks that are vegetarian, vegan, might have some kind of gluten intolerance, maybe dairy intolerance, and trying to make sure that we had the sorts of food items that were able to accommodate that kind of diet to make sure that folks are able to supplement with the foods that they actually can take in. And as we sort of made this shift into our new building, we've recognized that we're not able to kind of put these bags together for lack of a physical space to put them together or to set them out at. We've been able to provide gift cards to Metro Market or to Pick and Save to be able to give out to our community members to make sure that even if we can't provide the food itself, that we can provide access to be able to go and have the autonomy and agency to select the foods that you would like and that are going to meet your needs.
That sounds like, you know, a great way to be flexible, kind of in light of, you know, food insecurity and, you know, just the pandemic at large. You know, right now, our guest is Sydney Borden of the LGBT Community Center in Milwaukee. We want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. Now, another issue facing LGBTQ youth, particularly transgender individuals, is the name change process. And this is something that your community center offers a program, a name change clinic. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Absolutely. So the name change workshop was created and is implemented by my coworker, Alex Corona. And when we were operating pre-COVID, we were able to accommodate anywhere from 10 to 15 people coming into the center to physically sit down, be walked through the paperwork, sort of be shown, you know, this is kind of how this gets filled out. This is how this functions. We help people make copies because whenever you file something with the courthouse, it needs to be done to the letter. And what we would do is we were able to get like a fleet of Ubers, bring everyone over to the courthouse, and then sort of walk them through like, this is where you file this. This is where you go to meet, you know, the clerk, the judge. And it was a very nice, very hands-on sort of program. And as we've kind of shifted into COVID world, we've noticed we have to make an adjustment. So when we were in person, we were still able to bring people into the center, but then Alex Corona was actually filing all of the paperwork for folks. So that way it wasn't a burden to have to teach people how to navigate the court website, which, you know, came with a lot of unique challenges that were something that Alex had to tend to quickly and to make that shift. And it really happened very seamlessly. There wasn't much of an issue. Now the court dates were taking a little bit longer just because of, you know, operating this sort of capacity with things being on Zoom and things, you know, taking a little bit longer to file because now everyone's not in the courthouse building itself. So having to send all these things off in different forms of capacities. And even through that, we've still been able to service, I'd say like at least 50 to 60 folks just during the pandemic and facilitating the name change process, whether in a group or an individual setting.
Now, outside of your community center, what do youth individuals need as far as mental health services and access to necessary resources?
So we were definitely noticing that there were folks that might not have been engaging in individual therapy as frequently. So maybe folks that we were seeing twice a month or once a month that started shifting back to operating in weekly therapy to kind of be able to pad the gap of navigating what it was like to make this kind of adjustment to live in COVID world. And I would definitely say that the coordination of resources, it became very challenging. You know, we have other organizations that we tend to make a lot of cross references with that we were all sort of operating in different capacities, a lot of them being virtual, trying to figure out whose services, you know, are continuing, whose services made a shift. Is there anywhere that is still offering any kind of in-person programming? And sort of trying to make sure that as other youth-serving nonprofits, we were still coordinating what it was that we were doing so that we were still able to connect and still make sure that we were able to get the young people the services that they needed.
And Sydney, we'll have to leave it there. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Sydney Borden is the youth therapist for the LGBT Community Center in Milwaukee. The organization helps more than 100 individuals who are between the ages of 13 and 24 years old. And you can find out more about the organization online at wpr.org/mornings.